All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north, and it is June. Thursday, June 1st. Nice to have you along. 65 degrees up here on the lake. 62 in front of the giant walleye in Hayward. 63 in front of Chatty Bell, the giant cow in Neillsville. 65 in front of the giant beer can in Potosi. And 57 in Sparta in front of all the giant animals over at Fast Fiberglass. And it's going to be another warm day, hot day in some circles. Coming up on the program this morning, Dems in Array. You see, it's a well-worn punchline in political circles, the headline, Dems in Disarray. It's what the headlines scream at, even the slightest sign that Democrats aren't marching in lockstep. But compare progressives these days to what Republicans are going through on two fronts. The public backlash for repealing women's health care rights and the internal turmoil over the debt ceiling deal and how it really couldn't have passed the House of Representatives last night without the help from Democrats, even though Republicans supposedly run the place. We will visit with Joe Zepecki about GOP attempts to gloss over intraparty differences on both topics. Then Hometown Health comes up in our next hour, and we'll talk about the health benefits of drag shows. It just seems like the folks in the anti-woke crowd, it just seems like they're ideal candidates for high blood pressure or an aneurysm or something like that. They're just always wound so tight. Now, that's not an actual medical diagnosis, but we will have an actual doctor in the house, along with a drag performer from the Green Bay Area, to talk about how there could be mental health benefits to taking part in activities that create an atmosphere of acceptance and openness and being true to yourself. And along the way, if you have any questions, comments, input on any of the day's top stories, an opinion to share with a statewide radio audience, our phone line is 844-967-2789. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you watch the live video feed of this radio show on the Up North News or the Civic Media Facebook pages, you can leave a comment there. If we see it, we might put it up on screen for you as well. Aaron Zommers joins us from the studios down in Madison, where I assume it is equally warm, maybe humid down there too.
Oh, yeah. Very toasty, very soupy outside. I'm glad to be inside. And since I'm the only one here right now, I may or may not turn the AC up a little bit higher than normal.
You can do that as we continue to await the new studios that are under construction at the top of State Street near the state capitol, working out of the old setup. That there was concern about whether you can hear the noise, and we realized that you all can't really hear the fan that's blowing on me. So we're gonna go ahead and try the air conditioning in the studio and see if we can keep Aaron from becoming a puddle on these hot days. Did you catch the nearly full moon? I guess it's totally full on Saturday. It'll be a strawberry moon, they call it.
I did not, but what is this strawberry moon?
I don't really get into these names, they different thing. It could be either, zodiac related, or it could be related to the seasons. There could be indigenous names that are given to it. And I'm just being a fuddy-duddy when I say, it's the moon. And it gets full and it gets really bright. And for some reason, either because of my age or weirdness, it seems like whenever we have a really bright full moon or a near full moon, it gets a little tougher to sleep. I feel like I'm a little bit more susceptible to when it's really light out there as opposed to really dark. But it can also be quite beautiful. And so Saturday, when it does finally become full, I believe sunset is around 8:46. And then the full moon rises at about 8:52. On Saturday. So I'm hoping we have good weather for that. It's always nice when you see a big full moon rising over Lake Wissota or wherever you are. So hopefully you get a chance to enjoy that.
Yeah, I'll have to keep an eye out. I did just look it up, and it looks like some Algonquin tribes called it the strawberry moon. Has nothing to do with the appearance. It's because of a lot of strawberries being ready to harvest in June.
which again makes total sense, and I'm not in any way meaning to disrespect it. I'm just proving that I don't have the mental capacity to learn a whole bunch of new names.
Oh yeah, I'm not.
Not as social anymore. I will never learn your name. There are too many song lyrics from the 1970s and 80s that are stuck in here, and I cannot control or delete those things out of existence. And so the brain space is full for that. This is June 1st, and so as a result, we are in June Dairy Month. We are in Pride Month. The Pride flag will be hoisted over the state capitol for the fifth year later today. So we'll be talking about those things over the coming 30 days here. We'll check in with weatherology just over an hour from now and see if there is anything in the forecast precipitation-wise beyond the occasional pop-up shower or thunderstorm, because we're getting to that point now where, I mean, my lawn started out with just like one strip of brown grass or nearly brown grass along the edges of the driveway. And then the yard kind of slopes downward from there. And that patch is now like a quarter of the way down the lawn, where it's just, if you're like me and I don't sprinkle ceaselessly, because I think it's kind of a waste. You just say, well, we won't be running barefoot through that grass anytime soon, will we? And I've still got toys to pick up. My younger daughter and grandkids, ages 1 and 4, they left yesterday afternoon. And so there's still much to be cleaned around the house. And it's always rather bittersweet to remember just how much fun everybody had together. But also sometimes at my rapidly advanced age, late 50s, it's going to be nice to have a little peace and quiet as well. So news headlines, the debt ceiling deal, and more coming up next. You're up north. Morissette has a birthday today. We'll have lots of birthdays and music notes coming up a little bit later on in this hour. The Up North News newsletter comes out every morning about 5 a.m. and Christina Laurie puts that together for us. And lots of stories in there today, including the continuation of her bucket list series, this time Southwest Wisconsin, 7 places to explore on your summer road trip. She also has a link to our interview with Ben Murray, talking about the way that veterans were used as pawns in budget negotiations again. And she notes in the newsletter this weekend that Wisconsin State Park admission fees, fishing licenses, and trail passes will be waived as part of the DNR's 11th annual fun-free weekend. You can go explore any of our 50 state parks, 15 state forests, and 44 state trails for free. Get all the details on our newsletter. You can sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Time for sports now at 6:16. The Brewers were winners in Toronto. I had the game on in the background, was doing, we did 4 loads of laundry yesterday, getting through all the beach towels and bed sheets and everything from having company over. And I looked up and it said something about Abraham Toro hitting a home run for the Brewers. I did not know Abraham Toro was a Brewer, did not know he'd been called up and or traded for. So clearly I've got to be paying more attention to these games. But again, we have a lot of injuries right now. So Abraham Toro, get to know the name, with a 2-run homer. Owen Miller had 2 hits and drove in a pair of runs. The Brewers beat the Toronto Blue Jays up north 4-2 on Wednesday night. Toro was making his first start of the season since being called up from AAA Nashville. He connected in the second inning to get that home run for the Brewers. When the Brewers hit at least one home run in a game, they're 24-10. When they don't hit a home run in a game, they are 5-16. Meanwhile, Brewers right-handed pitcher Julio Teheran allowed an unearned run and 4 hits in 6 innings, but he didn't have a walk or a strikeout. And by the way, I listened and I heard 3 different pronunciations. I heard Julio Teheran. So until I hear it from him, please forgive me if I'm not saying it quite right. Back to Owen Miller's 2-run double. It got to be that way thanks to Joey Weimer and Christian Yelich pulling off a double steal just moments earlier, again in that Brewers victory 7-2. Oh, never mind the score. The game was weird for having this little feature. For the first time since what year did all the Brewers pitchers in this game have zero walks and zero strikeouts? And I want to say we had four pitchers total in the game, three relievers. All those pitchers combined, the Brewers had zero strikeouts, zero walks. First time the Brewers have had that happen in a game with their pitching staff since 1992. Again, it's nothing good or bad. It's just a weird little feature when that happens. And listen to this list of Brewers currently out due to injuries. Jason Alexander, Justin Wilson, Aaron Ashby, Matt Bush, Garrett Mitchell, Wade Miley, Brandon Woodruff, Eric Lauer, Luis Urias, Jesse Winker, and then Willie Adames is out for a couple of days after getting hit in the head with a foul ball. So we are truly the walking wounded at this point, and yet the Brewers hang on to first place in the National League Central Division. And you can hear the Brewers again this afternoon. Freddie Peralta takes the mound as they wrap up that series in Toronto. You can hear the game on News from the Center in Richland Center. That's 107.7 and 1450 AM, or Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM. And after that, it is off to Cincinnati for a four-game series, three-day games, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoons. And then they stick around for a Monday night game before a quick turnaround and starting a new homestand next Tuesday. And we will have tickets for one of those games. That would be next Wednesday's game. So we will give away tickets on this program on Monday and on Tuesday. In headlines at 6:20, the debt ceiling deal has passed the House. The vote was 314 to 117. And as had been predicted or reliably guessed, there were certainly enough votes from the most conservative Republicans and the most progressive Democrats so that it passed in what the architects of the deal will say truly means it's bipartisan. But it also means there are things in there that not everyone liked, and for some people, it pushed them to vote no. For example, in the Wisconsin delegation, Republican Tom Tiffany voted no, but so did the state's two Democrats, Mark Pocan and Gwen Moore. Pocan talked about, you know, there was too much of a handshake deal involved with some of the cuts that have been staved off. Tom Tiffany, I think it had something to do with, you know, we weren't putting, you know, a moat down at the Mexican border or something like that. And yet you had the state's other five Republicans, Scott Fitzgerald, Mike Gallagher, Glenn Grothman, Brian Stile, Derek Van Orden, all voted yes on the deal. And it had to come down that way in order for the bill to pass because, again, Kevin McCarthy could not deliver enough of a block of his votes that it required some Democrats who were rather on the fence about it to go ahead and vote for it so that the nation wouldn't go into default in a matter of days, which, by the way, is still a possibility because this deal now has to be voted on in the U.S. Senate and Democrats control it, but, you know, by the slimmest of margins, and there's no guarantees of anything when something goes through Capitol Hill. But many people expect that this bill will get done and that you will put off these terrible cuts that Republicans were trying to put in place. You'll put that off as well as putting off the whole notion of default. I wanted to bring up a story out of Milwaukee, but it's something that raises a question in cities around Wisconsin and frankly around America as well. Would we be better off if a few more of our streets were closed to vehicles and turned into pedestrian malls? In Milwaukee, the focus is on Brady Street. It's one of those stretches that, I mean, frankly, kind of takes you back in time. Lots of small retail shops and bars and restaurants and housing inside a lot of older buildings, you know, two-lane street, parking meters. It's, you know, it's downright charming at times, but it's also a busy street in a busy city where pedestrians have been struck before, and there's a man currently hospitalized with life-threatening injuries after being hit on Brady Street a couple of days ago. And there is already a group that is studying whether or how to basically pedestrianize Brady Street. Now, if you're familiar with Madison, consider State Street, the corridor that runs from basically the west door of the state capitol all the way to near Bascom Hall on the University of Wisconsin campus. State Street was not the near pedestrian mall that it is today. It was one of those busy, prototypical four-lane downtown streets for decades until 1974. Now, only buses, emergency vehicles, and some delivery vehicles use it. And that allows for more pedestrian access. It allows for more use of the sidewalks for things like outdoor tables, far less traffic noise, far less danger. Another example might be, say, Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis. I know that during the pandemic, different cities, Wausau among them, closed off parts of streets so that there could be more space for outdoor dining. So it's not just the biggest cities that are doing this. Either permanently or temporarily, communities are doing a little more blocking off of streets to entice more people back into downtowns and other business districts. Now, this takes planning, and it shouldn't wait for a tragedy to happen. And we can't pretend that cars don't still exist. You still want to get people to the downtown areas or the business districts who don't live there now. So you either have to upgrade public transportation, provide some more trails and lanes for getting downtown by bike or by foot, but you also need good parking available on the periphery, not just to bring money in, but or people in, but the money that they're going to spend. And you need to provide for public safety, which is something really tougher to do as Republicans continue squeezing local government budgets. But count me among those who are encouraged that we no longer surrender just every bit of available space to the automobile. You know, times change, things change. Our old downtowns gave way to suburban malls. Well, now the malls have all but emptied out. They're surrounded by strip malls, standalone businesses, chain restaurants. All of them are reliant on those SUVs and crossovers and monster pickup trucks that never seem to be hauling anything but imaginary testosterone. So if things are changing again, and if it means that local entrepreneurs are seeing more business and it's coming in on foot, that's great, you know, so long as it's planned out right. And so I hope that the folks at Brady Street can figure out which way they want to route their traffic. And I hope more communities give that a shot as a way to, again, put an end not just to the age of complete automobile dominance, but complete mall dominance as well. We have seen a big push through the Main Street Bounce Back Grant Program to help thousands upon thousands of businesses take over what had been vacant storefront space so that it makes our downtowns, you know, more vibrant. I know that downtown Chippewa Falls is one of those places with a situation that other downtowns envy. There's very little vacant storefront space. I think at times there's no vacant storefront space. And if something moves out, something else moves in pretty quick. We're all familiar with towns where there are multiple empty spaces in those downtown lots. And they deserve, you know, we deserve in our communities to do whatever we can to make them vibrant for our local entrepreneurs. We don't have to surrender everything to be the next, you know, Chili's or the next TGI Fridays or the next Applebee's or what have you. Not that there isn't a place for them, but there's also a place for some hometown cooking or a place where the local bartender can mix up a really good brandy old fashioned. They don't all have to be, you know, tattoo parlors. They can be there, but let's get a good mix of businesses in and look for the right ways to bring those folks in. A quick note on a story I saw out of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a couple of days ago about how some changes to federal financial aid formulas could make college more costly for some Wisconsin farm families. A change in the student aid formula meant that, well, there's a lot of farm families that they have low income, even though their assets are high dollar things like equipment and farmland. because you can't really harvest crops with a horse and a plow. So you've got all these expensive assets, but they don't necessarily bring in a big income. And as a result of a change of rules that does count those assets against students, some farm kids who might have been paying with a $60,000 a year income from their parents might have been expected to pay about $7,000 for college, are now going to be expected to contribute about $40,000 a year for Congress. It's a broken system that Senator Tammy Baldwin and others have called attention to and said, let's work on a fix. And if they can come up with a bipartisan fix to the debt deal, they can do this one too. Joseph Packey is next. You're up north. We are back at 6:33 this morning for our weekly visit with Joseph Packey to talk about what has been happening in the state capitol and with the Wisconsin delegation out in Washington. Joe, nice to have you here. Good morning. Hope it was a good holiday weekend.
Thanks. Likewise.
Yeah, definitely so. So there isn't a lot of news coming out in terms of the legislative session. They're still crafting a state budget and things, but some of the other work goes on. And I was very intrigued to see the Republicans in the legislature, well, some of them at least, introduce a new package of bills about abortion. Now, to back up the train just a little bit, as you know, there's this 1849 ban, near total ban. Sometime back, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and others said, well, let's carve out an exception for rape and incest. But too many other Republicans in the Senate and elsewhere said, no, they wouldn't go along with that. So now we get this new package of bills that does several different things. So before we review them, what's your take on this whole tactic of, again, trying to appear moderate on this 1849 ban?
Well, they have to try. As we learned this week, and I think we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth, Politico did a deep dive on the state of Wisconsin and the role that abortion played in the spring election, which, of course, Justice-elect Janet Protasiewicz won in an absolute romp. And so when you start to stack up the politics of this issue in the wake of the Dobbs decision, Republicans had a very tough midterm election in the fall of last year. They got smoked in the spring of this year. They know that they have a political problem. What they don't have is a solve. Because as you point out, they went down this road before. Some Republicans wanted to try to, you know, add exceptions. And the most conservative element said, oh, no, you don't. And so that one, you know, died before it even got off the runway. And now you've got Republicans trying again with exceptions, but this time without exceptions for rape or incest, which basically means just further codifying the 1849 law. And same thing. It's not going to go anywhere. So I guess give them credit for realizing they have a problem, right? That's the first step to addressing a challenge, is understanding you have a problem. But they don't know what to do about it. They are captive to the most extreme elements of their base on this issue. And as I have predicted before, I mean, we're talking years, if not decades, before Republicans figure this out.
Yeah. You know, in the meantime, you wonder, is it a case of trying to appear moderate in some areas? Are they trying to sweep their party divisions under the rug? Or does this actually call more attention to those divisions? I would certainly argue the latter, that anytime they're trying to moderate something so extreme and failing really to come off of the far extreme, it only reminds people why they voted against them and probably will for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I really think the big story right now from a 30,000 foot view is the Republicans remain a house divided at the national level, at the state level. They are lost as a party. They probably have been since former President Trump came down the golden escalator in 2015. But so now we're looking at 8-9 years where Republicans can't figure it out. They don't know what they stand for. They don't know what they believe in. Remember, this is a political party that in 2020 did not have a national platform. They basically said, whatever that guy wants, that guy being former President Trump. And so they don't have ideas. They don't have a true North Star when it comes to their policies that they pursue. And we see this play out on issue after issue, where sort of old school conservative ideology, which you can disagree with, but was certainly more respectable, has gone the way of the dodo bird, whether that's on local control, whether that's on government oversight and regulation of big business and corporations in this country, whether it's on women's access to reproductive health care. They are a house divided, and houses that are divided struggle politically. That's just the way our polarized world works. I don't see any reason to think that in the next 6 months or in the next year and a half, they're going to figure this out.
No, and we have seen it in other places as well. I certainly saw it, you went many years back in the Capitol when Democrats were in the majority, where you have the purists and those who consider themselves pragmatic. And boy, if you want to watch behind closed doors in a caucus, if you want to see some color, watch for the times when somebody says, look, we've got to be practical, we've got to be pragmatic and pass something. And then the purists say, you're a sellout. I believe that's how we got the term rhino, you know, Republican in name only. And you never like to see it if it's in your house, but when you see it elsewhere, and especially on an issue like this, where there shouldn't be such extremes tolerated, but here that divisiveness, that chasm in the Republican Party is quite real. And, you know, the pragmatists can say all they want that, you know, we got to pass something, we got to try, but they are so beholden to a minority base right now.
That's right. I mean, I guess I should give the Republican Party credit for one thing. They all agree on one thing. They're aggrieved. They are put upon. Yes. It doesn't, you know, maybe it's somebody different this week than it was last week, but woe is the Republican Party. Just ask them. And, you know, that's leading to some real head scratchers of outcomes in terms of public policy. It's leading to a near disaster in Washington, D.C. But yeah, the Republican Party's got to figure it out. And what I would just remind everybody, this is not your father's Republican Party. This is not your grandfather's Republican Party. They are lost and they don't know how to find their way to shore right now.
No, because there is no way that they move the public opinion needle, and that needle is squarely in the camp of the bulk of Wisconsinites supporting abortion rights and overwhelmingly supporting exceptions for rape and incest, but abortion rights overall, and they're seeing a party that is just not something they care to be associated with at this point. And so I don't know what that portends for 2024, except that, well, until they actually get a standard bearer to run against Tammy Baldwin, we don't know which faction of the party is going to be the main voice a year from now.
Well, I think we do. When you look at, you know, Tom Tiffany is the most likely Republican candidate at this point. When you look at the you know, history tells us something and it matters, and recent history tells us a lot. Tim Michaels over Rebecca Clayfish, right? I just have a hard time sitting here today believing that all of a sudden some pragmatic, responsible alternative is going to emerge, where, you know, wearing the cloak of the Republican Party. And, you know, what is Tom Tiffany up to this week? Saying he doesn't care if the United States defaults. He is willing to default on the full faith and credit of the United States of America. He will be voting no on the debt limit deal. I mean, this is not responsible. This is not reasonable or rational. It's insanity. And, you know, responsible members of Congress right now are saying this is not a perfect deal, or this is a terrible way to do this, but they are still going to vote for this piece of legislation. Not Tom Tiffany. If it were up to him, he'd let us go off the cliff. And that should send a shudder down the spine of every Wisconsinite.
Well, Trump was calling all but rooting for default as well, and Tiffany was the one who actually supported overturning the will of the Wisconsin voters, overturning a Wisconsin election. So it shouldn't be a big surprise that Tiffany is going to vote in a way that says he would be okay with a recession, because he comes from that fringe of the party. So
not just a recession, more like a depression.
Yeah.
I mean, globally, the impact of this, if the U.S. defaulted, would every single person's 401k, every single family that works, this would be cataclysmic And shame on anyone who is not being part of the solution to make sure that this deal gets done and across the finish line before June 5th, which is the X date.
So it sounds like you basically answered the question, but I'll go ahead and ask it again anyway. The fact that there is such muted reaction from Wisconsin Democrats and most Republicans, that it is living up to the cliche that if everybody's unhappy, it must be a good compromise, because the alternative is everybody is unhappy because it is a terrible package. But it certainly seems more the former than the latter.
Yeah. Listen, the House Freedom Caucus threw their temper tantrum. Those are the most radical far right, Lauren Boberts of the world. They threw their temper tantrum yesterday. I think on the left, you will have some people who vote no. And if you've got the far right and the far left uniting in opposition, there's a whole lot of folks in between those two poles who are going to do the responsible thing and the right thing and agree to the deal that President Biden and Speaker McCarthy came to. And among my favorite things out of this terrible, terrible melodrama, because this is insane. We should abolish the debt limit entirely. This is no way to run the government.
Amen.
But Speaker McCarthy, when asked how he found his negotiations with President Biden, said that the president was really smart. He was tough. It was a good conversation. And you could just sort of feel Republicans from that Fox network on down going, "Oh, no, we want people to believe President Biden is drooling in his soup. We can't have leading Republicans out there saying that Joe Biden's on the ball and knows what he's talking about and understands the federal budget and the debt limit and is capable of negotiating in good faith with a Republican Speaker of the House." Oops. Mr. McCarthy forgot about that part of the drill.
You can't. Yeah, the narrative is not supposed to ever fail. And yet right. there
it can only
was.
Be failed.
Yes, there it was exposed. Of all of the reactions to taking the nation away from the brink of default and working out this kind of agreement, my bingo card did not include, and it should have, but it did not include Glenn Grothman being unhappy with it, because it doesn't do enough to punish poor people who are getting rental assistance.
Oh, come on. You've known Mr. Grothman long enough.
Oh, I know. I just
that's a hobby horse of his.
I didn't think he'd actually spend nearly a half hour on the floor of the House last week, talking about how straight white guys are victims because nobody's getting a federal judgeship. I know that's his brand. It's just you always kind of forget about it until in the most unexpected places he pops up and says, "Yeah, we're not doing enough to punish the poor with rental assistance." Okay. Yeah. Well,
you remember, Pat, when people tell you who they are, believe them.
Yes, every single time. It's just that what it brings to Wisconsin is this person, again, who I served with in the state Senate, so I know him. I'm just saying that every time he stands up with the, what was the one, one of the original greatest hits from Glenn Grothman, that, attacking Kwanzaa, and then, yeah, of course, anything that is geared toward ending 200 years of institutional racism is itself racist and divisive. He's always on brand. I'll give him that much. Always.
And is serving as a member of Congress in the same party as Ron Johnson, we don't get reminded as much because Senator Johnson takes up so much of that oxygen.
Yes. Grothman is right up there as well as with Tom Tiffany, which is actually why you see so much targeting of Brian Stile and Mike Gallagher, is because they're trying to say, well, hey, look at Grothman, look at, Ron Johnson, look at Scott Fitzgerald, and I'm the moderate, but all that means to me is they know how to say some of the right things, but what they do is another matter altogether. And they all voted for that House Republican bill.
They sure did. That the one that would have cut the VA by 22%, resulting in tens of thousands of fewer visits to the VA by Wisconsin veterans. They put their name to it. So they're going to have to live with that. They're going to have to defend that for the next year and a half. And I don't think they're going to have a very good time doing it.
Last question. Minnesota made it official by signing the bill legalizing marijuana this week. It'll take effect in a few more weeks here. But Wisconsin will be an island of legal pot prohibition. So in 30 seconds, with that happening, any chance we go back on what we said several weeks back and Wisconsin Republicans say, let's throw this in and let's appear moderate in this area?
Not this time around. Listen, Wisconsin is going to legalize cannabis in all of its forms eventually. The only question is how long is it going to take? We cannot remain on an island for decades to come. There is a real cost and competitiveness issue here at play. But until Republicans find religion on this, or we vote them all out and have a trifecta where Democrats control the Assembly and the Senate and the governor's mention, it ain't going to happen.
Joe Specky, thank you so much. Have a great start to the weekend.
See you next week.
And again, the final vote had 149 Republicans backing the measure, but 71 voted against it. They needed 165 Democrats to come on board, while 46 opposed it. We'll be back with This Day in History after this. You're up north.
Radio 92.7 WMDX, the truth you can't ignore.
Girl, it just ain't right. Ronnie Dunn from Brookston Dunn is 70 years old today. Welcome back to Up North News Radio for today's little history lesson and music break. And we're joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who will be with us in an official capacity in our next hour because it's Thursday and it's Hometown Health. How are you? How was your holiday weekend of working? And it wasn't all work, thankfully.
There was a lot of work, but no, I got some nice bike rides in and did some visiting and tourism stuff. It was good.
Good. We'll talk about the tourism stuff a little bit later on, but it's great to have you back in Wisconsin for at least a little while.
Oh man, it feels so good. And the weather's good. And I just love being home.
It is. There's, again, no place like home. It's so true. Pat Boone is 89 years old today. It's, again, another one of those where when somebody passes away, you know, and he hasn't yet. Again, happy birthday, Pat Boone. But it's one where you go, I didn't know you were still with us, you know?
Remember when he put out that Hard Rock album?
Yes.
Not all that long ago?
Yes. It was sad and cute at the same time. Morgan Freeman is 86 years old today.
Wow.
That one, yeah. The talk about the voice of a permanent narrator, you know. Marilyn Monroe was born on this day in 1926. She passed away in 1962. Simon Gallup, the bassist for The Cure, is 63 years old today.
They're on tour.
Yes, they are, aren't they? Yes. Yeah. And Mike Joyce, drummer for The Smiths, is 60 years old today. The number one record this day in 1963 came from a young lady who had just turned 17 a few weeks earlier. That, of course, would be Leslie Gore. Now, here's your music trivia. Maybe this is more for Aaron, so don't spoil it, but maybe you don't know the answer as well. She did have a follow-up hit, basically a sequel to this song. You're familiar with it, Kristen? Aaron, are you familiar with it?
Probably, but not by name off the top of my head.
It's called It's Judy's Turn to Cry.
Okay,
because
no,
in the song, it talks about Judy wearing her boyfriend's ring.
Yeah, yeah.
And like many songs from the early 1960s, it basically sounds almost exactly the same as
right.
It's My Party. I mean, it's got enough of a bass. So if you want to find It's Judy's Turn to Cry, that might just play us out of this segment. You never know.
And you know who produced that album?
No.
Quincy Jones.
Oh, Quincy Jones did do this one. Yes, that's right. I think we even did a story about that, about how he had to race to get it done and pressed because somebody else was going to be recording the song as well.
Mm-hmm. One of my faves.
On this day in 1967, David Bowie released a self-titled album, his first. And it sounds, Aaron says, writes here, almost nothing like the rest of his work, which is why we don't hear much about David Bowie's very first album. On this day, the following year, 1968, we played a snippet of it earlier, but the number one song this day in 1968 was from Simon and Garfunkel. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Written for the movie The Graduate, which I'm trying to think when I finally saw it. It probably was not late college, shortly after college. I don't know if you've seen it, Kristen. Does the movie hold up after all these years?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Same here. And I just recall watching it and at the end of it going, that wasn't as satisfying as I thought it would be, because again, you build up expectations because of these legendary movies. Some live up to them, like The Godfather. Others maybe not so much. I don't know. Aaron, ever seen The Graduate?
I have not.
I'm figuring there's a cutoff line where nobody below the age of I'm about to turn 59, so I'm going to say nobody below the age of, you know, 55 has probably ever seen the movie, but I could be wrong.
I think it's the theme that made it so spicy. I don't think it was necessarily the movie making, but it was the theme and the time and all of that.
Yeah, there were a lot of depressing movies back then as the, you know, generations tried to cope with one another. Hey, speaking of generations, Heidi Klum turns 50 years old today. Alanis Morissette, we mentioned earlier, she turns 49. Cable News Network is 43 years old today. Began broadcasting this day, CNN, in 1980. The number one song this day in 1985 was from Prince. She wore a raspberry beret, the kind you find in a secondhand store. I feel like we should just turn the show over and make it First Avenue here for the entire next hour.
Let's do it.
Randy Carlyle is 42 today. Comedian Amy Schumer is 42. Actor Tom Holland is 27. And that's actually going to make some young people feel old, isn't it? You hear that that a young Peter Parker is now 27. He's almost old now.
I definitely thought he was older than that. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I just look up the dates. I don't look into their eyes and say, "You're lying. You're lying, Tom Holland. You're actually 37, not 27. There were a lot of releases, albums and songs released on this day. We're not going to play clips today because we tend to do that on the anniversary that they hit number one or something like that. But it was on this day in 1985 that A-ha released their debut album that had Take On Me. Sting released his first solo album, The Dream of the Blue Turtles. On this day in 1999, Blink-182 released their third album, Enema of the State. I love that title. Featuring hits like What's My Age Again and All the Small Things. Ja Rule released his debut album, Veni Vidi Vici, in 1999. And Brad Paisley released his debut album, Who Needs Pictures, this day in 1999. Kristen, where are you on this current debate, given what the weather's been like lately? Air conditioning's on already, or we're still doing everything through the windows, even if it is 90 degrees?
I personally am an open the windows kind of gal, and my kids are all on the air conditioning bus. So in order to be a good mom, I have had the air conditioning on for quite a while, actually.
Personally, I've always been on the air conditioning bus because there are so many seasonal allergies in my family, and they're all staggered just a little bit off from one another. So opening the windows has never really been an option.
Mm-hmm. I try to keep it open windows and fans, and I love fans. I've got ceiling fans, and you know, can we get a shout out to the old fashioned box fan still getting it done in certain situations, especially if you've got grandkids that then like to talk into them because they get the voice like this.
Did you ever put a sheet around your box fan and make yourself an air fort?
Oh yeah. 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 You know, I mean, we didn't have complete bounce house technology, but that was as close as we could get was to have something like that. So I try with the windows open as much as possible. But yesterday I'd finally gotten to the point where I was like, okay, it's, you know, the thermostat says 85 in the house and let's go ahead and turn the AC on. And you know, that unit, I moved into this house 28 years ago today, and it's starting to show its age because finally after about 3 hours, it had come down to 80 degrees, and the outside temperature at that point then had dropped all the way to 79. So okay.
Open the windows.
Open the windows. Mother Nature wins this one. I'd forgotten the lesson that, yes, the air conditioner works just fine, but not on short notice. You actually have to start it up at like 10 in the morning, and so that when you're in that late afternoon heat, you're like, oh, yeah, this is nice. I like being in a house that's air conditioned.
Pat, your air conditioner is like La Soda.
Oh, I'd love that. Oh, that pontoon, I'll tell you. That's my air conditioner. All right, hometown health and much more in our next hour. You're up north.